It's October the 28th, 2013, Monday, in the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on planet Earth. Welcome to Into the Word Apologetics. This is the webcast, and this is your internet pastor, Pastor John, thanking you for joining me today. What is our title all about? Hanging on to a train for life and God? Who are you talking about now, PJ? Talking about me. I want to take you way back. I want to take you way back in time. I want to take you back in time. I think it was 1966, to be exact. 1966. A long time ago. I was hanging on to a train for life. I should have dropped off of the train. Let me give you the scenario. I was in the Army. I had been stationed in Seoul, Korea. We were on a field maneuver, field problem. That's where you take your radio truck rig and put it on the back of a flat car of a freight train. You pick it up in downtown Seoul, and then you travel towards the DMZ for some field problems or field operations, field exercises, practicing in case of war. Well, we had our radio teletype truck. There was about myself and three other GIs in that truck and in that radio van. Sergeant Cap was in charge of us. It was myself. I forget the other soldiers' names. I'll never forget the weekend because I got to tell the truth on this. I'll tell you, it was the weekend that I was sexually involved with some prostitutes, and I caught something. Yeah, and I was a little upset about that, but Cap had some penicillin tablets with him. And after about 3 or 4 days of taking that thing dried up. At least they tell me that I'm clean to this day. Sharing that with you because I'm not the good old nice guy that everybody thinks that I try to be all the time. It's not like that. I dibbled and dabbled out there. I know what it is like to have that part of my life. Now, I want to talk about something because I want to talk about that weekend. And let me talk about that weekend. I think that's very important for me. We're on this truck and we were going to go out there. I was just PFC. I was a private. No, was I? Or was I E4? Yeah, I think I was specialist. I think so. I believe I was. And pretty good radio teletype operator also. As a young man. What was I then? I think I was what? 21, 22, something like that. Young man, just like these young men that I speak to today. I was their age, just like these youngsters that I speak to at the college. And I'll never forget the incident. We were on our way to, I think, Pohang, something like that. If you get a map of South Korea, I was in the 304th Signal Battalion, stationed with the 8th Army Support Command. While they were fighting and bloodletting in Vietnam, I did not luck out. It was predetermined by God Almighty that my orders were to be stationed in Seoul, Korea, the capital city of Korea. I don't know how I got there. I was just a regular soldier stationed in the Signal Corps. Like everyone else, I didn't do anything to get any special privileges. My brother, He was sent to Vietnam. He's alive, but he's affected tremendously by the Agent Orange situation today. But I was favored, I guess, if you can call it that, to go to Korea. I don't know why. But let me give you the incident. I'm on the train, and you can only put two men in the cab of the truck. And it's only comfortable for two other men, two or three. I think it was two or three other men. I'm not sure. I think it was at least two other men in the radio, in the RTT, radio teletype truck van itself. It's a big box with an antenna on it and a heck of a lot of radios on it. And I was in the Signal Corps, so we had to establish crypto line communications with our guys. That was the job for the weekend. And we had to go down to Pohang. Since we didn't know where it was, the train took us there. And when we disembarked off the train, someone gave us directions to where we were supposed to go. So that's what the incident was. Well, I was riding in the cab with another GI. I don't know who it was. And it was snowing, and the train was moving about 20, 25 miles an hour. We were going through this mountain range, this gorge. I'll never forget it. One of the most beautiful sights that I've ever seen in Korea. Korea at night, when you get away from the city and you get out into the open countryside of Korea, it is beautiful. I'm telling you, it is a beautiful country. I have a couple of color slides of it. I'm going to have to take some pictures of it and put it up on my website and show you guys sometimes. It's around this house somewhere. I got them on old color slides somewhere. I'm going to have to show them. As a matter of fact, I think I'll show those slides since my slide projector still works. I'm going to show them on Wednesday in my Bible study. I haven't showed them in years, but I'm thinking about showing them to the group that comes out, just to let them know that you can live a heck of a long time. I was in the truck cab, and of course the truck, the front of the truck was facing in the direction that the train was coming from. And we were on a flat car, so all we were looking at was the box car in back of us, and we were in the cab. Two of us were in there, and we would talk and snack on our Fritos and stuff and talk about back home, what's going on. And Sergeant Cap beat on the wall and said, "Food's ready. It's time to switch," because two of them had to leave the cab and come out to sit in the truck. And then we had to go into the compartment. That's where our food was, and we had to eat. And so the way that you did this is, while the train was moving on the flat car, we got out of the driver's side of the truck, and where other two guys were coming in the rider's side of the truck from the back door. They came out of the back door, and they just held on to the side of the truck without gloves. We were young men. We knew how to hold on. But we didn't know that there was a curb coming up. So I was getting out of the driver's side of the cab of the truck to come down the side of the truck to get in the back of this container so that I could eat. And as I was holding on to the side of the truck, the train hit a very sharp curve and was going about 25, 30 miles an hour. And one hand slipped off of the side of the railing that I was holding on to. It just slipped off. There was only one hand holding my 165-pound body onto the railing, and I was hanging there with one arm. I've never been a very good gymnast. I've never been strong, and I knew that I was going to slide my hand was going to slide off of the other rail, and it was a gorge. And if I had slid down the gorge, I looked down, my legs were dangling until I got my composure back in about 2 seconds. But for 1 second, for 2 seconds, it was like this giant hand. I did my hand against my other hand over the microphone so that you could hear it. It was like this hand holding my hand on the rail. I have vivid memories. I remember everything. I recall it all. And the other guy behind me saw me, and he said, "John, hold on." And that's when because there's no way that I could hold on. Something grabbed my hand and held that rail. I finally got in the cab. Sergeant Cap says, "Why is this look on your face?" And the other guy behind him, I don't know who he was, he says, "John almost fell in the gorge. He slipped off the side of the..." What? They all said, "What?" Because the Sarge stayed in there, and the other two, yeah, there were five of us, and the other two guys had to go and get in the cab. The Sarge stayed in there because that's where the crypto equipment was and all the weapons were. And it was wartime. They were fighting in Vietnam, and this was no game, you know. We had this top secret equipment, and we were given specific instructions who to shoot and if anybody came around that stuff. I mean, this was big time stuff in the Army back in the Vietnam conflict. And I was thinking yesterday about me hanging on to the things that he held on to me for. I talk with young men, I always tell them, be careful what you're doing, man. I tell them all the time, be careful what you're doing, be careful what seed you are sowing. Because everything may look like partying, fun, games, all of that kind of stuff. But if what you are doing is not something that can preserve your life for tomorrow, for however long tomorrow may be, and that, albeit for the glory of the living God who created you. Now, come on, stop with the nonsense talking about you don't believe in God. Stop it. Someone tried to give me a drug to induce me to say that I don't believe in God, give me some kind of a potion to make me dizzy. I was thinking about it this morning as I was shaving, getting ready to go to work. What if someone got me and tortured me, actually tortured me, and tried to torture me to get me to say that I don't believe in God, that I don't believe in Christ? Let me tell you something. There's a great verse in the Bible, Romans chapter 8, verse 28. It says, And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. What a verse. Listen. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good. Me on the train. Me sliding off of the train. That slap on my hand, holding me on there. I didn't even know God in a personal way then. No, I had not responded to the call of God in my life because he had never spoken clearly to me to let me know that he cared enough to protect me. Why did he protect me? Why didn't he let me fall off of that train and fall into the valley, into the gorge? Listen to me. Why didn't he let me drop? Why didn't he let this insignificant black man fall into the gorge of a valley, break his neck, to have the Koreans stop the freight train, maybe go back 2 miles, because there was no way for Sergeant Cap to stop the train. No way. I would have been lost for days, frozen to death in the snow. Why? Why didn't he just let me? Just, you know, if you were a racist, you would say, why didn't God let that nigger fall off the train, fall in the snow, and just die? I was thinking about it yesterday. I was thinking about it when people tell me, stop believing that some of these young men in your hood, whose parents were crackheads, whose parents back in the 80s threw it all away, whose parents went for the gusto of the good life, whose parents will be eternally judged for destroying their children, destroying them where they are. Why did he slap my hand on that bar and hold me tight? Because I believe that if I continuously strive for one where I am, one day, because God said, God knew that he causes everything to work together for the good. In other words, that is good for me as a believer. And it does me very good in my soul, because this providence attends for the spiritual good for those that love God. That's what that's saying. And in breaking me off from all the things, you see, because that's what he did when he slapped his hand spiritually in a way on mine. He broke me off from sin, bringing me nearer to God, weaning me from the world, weaning me, causing me a fitting place for a destination some time away from me in life. I don't know what the reward is that he has for me. I don't know what he has for me, really. But I tell you this one thing, I'm going to love. When everybody stops loving around me, when everybody stops doing what they're doing, what they're supposed, I'm going to keep on doing it. And I want to admonish you guys to keep on doing it. I don't care how heavy it gets. Tell you feel God's hand go right on your hand to hold you there in that place. Right there to hold you steady, to hold you firm. Don't look at how much money you have. Don't look at how much stuff you got, because it's not about that. All that's going to run out eventually. It's not about having that. It's not about those people that think about, you know, they, hey, man, let gold be your, man, let gold be what? 20 people can attack you and kill you in less than a minute. You and yours and all that you stand for. Oh, no. No. I want to read something to you, my friend. It says in Romans chapter 8, verse 30, it says, and those whom he predestined, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified. And those whom he justified, he also glorified. Do you know what he's saying right there in verse 30? Do you know what he's saying? I'm going to tell you what he's saying. Those whom he foreknew, he predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. That's why he held me on that train. He said, oh, no, I'm not going to let you go, little black boy from Watts. Little black 22-year-old, insignificant, nothing. Little beady-head boy. I'm going to hold you there. I'm going to bring you around. Oh, since you like Asian women, I'm going to give you an Asian woman. She's not going to be from Korea, but she's going to be. Because, see, that's where you caught that from. No, no, no. You were with the wrong kind of women, boy. I'm going to hold you together. You didn't listen to what your grandmother told you when she had you going to church when you was a little boy. You was foot loose and fancy free out there filling your oats, doing what you wanted to do. But when it was time for you to fall in that filthy, cold, snow, drifting gorge, I held your hand on that bar on that truck. An old RTT rig I'm going to have to find a picture of it to put it up on the website when I put it up there, and so that you know exactly how it looked. And when you see a picture of that rig, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They got it somewhere on the internet. I'll find it. Mm-hmm. God predestined me to be the preacher that I am. That's why I do what I do. And I want to admonish you people, this is not going to be a long webcast because I have to go to school. I have to work. I thank God Almighty that He's given me some employment, because without this little job from the college, I'd be homeless. I wouldn't be able to make it. And I thank God who lives in the heavenlies, who watches over me, and who makes it possible for me to help some of these young men sometime. But sometime I got to give them hard love, because see, that was hard love what God did to me. See, I had to hold with one hand with all the strength that I had, and with the rest of the strength that I didn't even know I had to depend upon God. I told a young man, I said, I prayed for you because you're making some horrible decisions in your life. And these horrible decisions that you're making are going to come back. And he said, will you help me? No. I will never help anyone that will not make the right decisions. When you're told once, if you don't make that right decision, and if you choose to make the wrong one, you're going to find yourself languishing. And every week, I see more and more him falling off. Everything that he puts his hand to is turning to rottenness. And now he's getting it. He's saying, what is life all about? Life is about holding on. Holding on to a train for your life and for God. And so when that test comes in all of our individual lives, and it's coming, it is coming. You had better know that it is God who has his hand on you, preserving you for the time that he has it. Now, this is where a young man loses his mind. I was talking with a man yesterday that spent a little time in prison, and indeed for the crimes done. And he was talking to me about, because this man knows me, we were talking about a funeral that I did of a guy that he knows. He was in the Rolling 60s Crips gang, and he said, you, Pastor John, did the funeral. I recall it because I was there. And I said, I remember the young man. He was a drug dealer. He went to Fred Price's church. Fred Price wouldn't even do his funeral because he said he didn't want to be mixed up with a big time drug lord. And this little light skinned boy made so much money selling drugs, you'd never know. Well, the opposition gang shot him in the chest and killed him. And his father came down, which I just learned recently died, but his father came down to the house. He lived on the street and asked me to do the funeral. I said, well, of course I'll do it. And then I told him I'd do it for free. I don't want no money. I'll never forget. I did the boy's funeral. Man, the funeral home was packed wall to wall. They thought I was going to talk about heaven and hell and everything. I didn't do that. I spoke about this young man and the beauty of his life. I spoke about one night when I was in my house and he was down on the corner playing his boombox as loud as he could turn it up, 3 o'clock in the morning. My wife, she said, honey, I can't sleep. I said, oh, that's that boy down there. He was selling so much crack cocaine. And I went out there and he heard me walking up. I said, it's me. And I mentioned him by his name. And he said, hey, preacher. And I sat down on the curb and he turned his music down and I put my arm around him. And I said, I just want to tell you, son, that I love you and I'm praying for you. That boy's dead now. That boy's dead. I thought I was doing that, you know, holding him. I can't hold him. That was his time. That was his time. Parents, listen to me. You have children young. Now, they're starting in debauchery very young these days. They start very, very young. They don't start having sex at 18, 19, the way my generation did like that. I was a virgin until I was 20, well, like I said, what is this, 22, 21, 22. I think I lost my virginity when I went in to the Army. They're losing their virginity when they go into grade school. I got young men telling me that they're out here banging these 35-year-old women at 15. I mean, it is sickening. I got people telling me that they're trying to swear off having sex with these people because they've had sex with over 250. A person ain't even 22 yet. But over 250 people ahead is completely messed up behind that. And the hoes that they've been with, God only knows who they're with. I'm just keeping it candid and frank for you as your internet pastor. There's a mess going on here. When I was on the radio, I was talking about it. The church didn't listen, not listening now. I'm talking about it on my website. Get a grasp, get a grip. You parents, you're going to work, you better get that cable cut off. Get Wi-Fi cut off in your house. If they get mad, whip that. I'm sorry. Chastise them in the way that they're supposed to do. And when they get old, they would not depart from it. Trust me. When that hand grasped mine, I knew what it was. All that God designed for glory and happiness, He decreed to grace and holiness in the life of John Coleman. I'm not saying that I've been that every day of my life. No, I've sinned against my Maker, just like everyone else. But I'm here trying to share something with you today. God is determined to recover some by regeneration and the power of His grace. That's what He did to me. He predetermined. He predestined, if you will. He decreed that I should be this internet pastor today to talk with you today. Do something for your babies, please. If you are a parent, sit down with them, talk with them. That boy, talk with them. Look, I'm not going to say that the world got him. Their peers got them because they've left you. When you dropped them off at that bus to go to school, that's where you lost them. When you bought them those headsets to listen to that music, when you bought them flashy shoes and socks and clothes and skinny jeans, oh, the system got them. They're swagging their butts right down the street right now, lifeless, senseless. What are you doing as a parent? As my Doberman pincers start barking at a neighboring dog being walked down the street this morning, you need to pay attention to your children, parents. Pay attention. Take it from a man that hung on a train for life and for God. What are your children hanging on for? What are they going to be? Thank you for tuning into the webcast. This is Pastor John, just running his mouth, thinking. How about you? God bless you. You have a great day.